This is East End Ink. Today we present Map of Hope and Sorrow, the stories of refugees who fled violence or persecution only to become trapped in the worst refugee camps in Europe. The book was written by Helen Benedict, professor of journalism at Columbia University, and Syrian writer and refugee Ayad Awadnan. The virtual discussion was presented by Kanyo's Cultural Cafe off Sag Harbor. Here is Kanyo's Marianne Calendrill.
Our two esteemed guests, Helen Benedict and Ayad Awadnan, have co-authored the book. Helen Benedict is a recipient of the 2021 Penn Jean Stein Grant for Literary Oral History and the Otto B. Wells Award for Bravery in Journalism. She's author of 13 books, that's novels as well as nonfiction, including the award-winning The Lonely Soldier, The Private War of Women Serving in Iraq, and a play entitled The Lonely Soldier Monologues. Helen's writing has inspired both a class action suit against the Pentagon on behalf of people sexually assaulted in the military, and in 2012, the Oscar-nominated documentary, The Invisible War. She's a novelist and professor of journalism at Columbia University. Working with Helen closely and joining us tonight from Reykjavik, we welcome Ayad Awadnan, formerly a law student from Damascus, Syria. He is a writer and poet, currently living as an asylum seeker in Reykjavik. During his 4 years in Greece, Ayad has worked as a cultural mediator, translator, and interpreter for various NGOs. He has published a featured article in Slate magazine detailing his escape from Syria.
This is my friend Hassan. He is a man without hope. These were the words that Ayad Awadnan used to introduce his fellow Syrian to me when we met in 2018. The three of us were standing inside a foul-smelling, overcrowded refugee camp, surrounded by tents, rubbish, and flies, while a police officer eyed us suspiciously from inside his guard booth. Hassan knew little English at the time, and I do not speak Arabic, so Ayad translated. I turned to squint at Hassan through the sun. It was June and Greek island hot, and I had just failed to find a working toilet or running water, the camp supply having been cut to 2 hours a day. He gazed back at me shyly, a slight man of medium height, with a gaunt face, dramatic black eyebrows, a crooked nose, and a bold streak of white through his black hair. His smile seemed kind, but his brow was lined and his mouth pinched, so I took him for more than 40. He was, I later found out, 25. Shall we go somewhere private to talk? I asked, curious to hear what had robbed him of hope. Yes, follow us, please, Ayad replied for him, and led us up the scrubby mountainside above the camp to the spot where he and his family had slept during their first weeks on the island. There we sat on a fallen log in the shade of an ancient olive tree, encircled by clumps of brittle yellow grass and litter, and gazed out at the sea. One of the many ironies that comes from installing a hideous refugee camp on a beautiful island like Samos is that from every angle the camp looks over a view fit for the gods. The northern Aegean stretches in its glittering turquoises and blues all the way to the sky. The town of Vathi lies like a tumble of sugar cubes at the bottom of the hill below the camp, and the lavender mountains of Turkey rise in the near distance, the very Anatolian range under which Homer had Odysseus glimpse the tortures of Tantalus. It is hard to escape the thought that refugees on Samos suffer a similar fate, taunted wherever they turn by a horizon that promises distant lands they may never see, a beauty they lack the peace of mind to appreciate, and a freedom they fear they will never find. Ayad Hassan and the other refugees on Samos and in this book embody an enormous change in modern history. Not only are there some 84 million forcibly displaced people in the world, more than at any time since World War II, and millions more since Putin invaded Ukraine, but they are fleeing a combination of war, civil unrest, religious conflict, poverty, persecution, local violence, and global warming, forces often inextricably intertwined, just at a point when authoritarian governments are rising all over the world and anti-immigrant sentiment is rising with them. As a result, many refugees are being persecuted, demonized, and denied their legal rights, not only by those authoritarian nations, but within Europe, Britain, Australia, and the United States too, the very democracies that are supposed to protect them and that in some cases turned them into refugees in the first place. The US's war on terror alone has displaced more than 37 million people since 2001. Some of the worst of this persecution is being played out in Greece. So that explains kind of why we focused on Greece, because it is the main gateway to Europe, and also because in 2016, the EU made a deal with Greece and Turkey to basically trap anybody coming from the Middle East and Africa there and stop them coming to Western Europe. And that's why we have the subtitle Trapped in Greece. And they did the trapping partly through mostly through bureaucratic slowdowns that just meant that people, once they arrived, couldn't leave for years and years.
I would like to start, like, what was the reason that brought me to Greece in the first place? And the same thing about Helen, too.
Yeah.
I would say, like, I'm sure for the last 11 years, you have heard a lot of news about the Syrian revolution. So I would say that the first reason that I left Syria was because of the war and because there is no safety anymore. I was a student in Syria. I was like studying for 2 years out of four in the law school, but I couldn't finish. Like, even though I was living like around Damascus, so we moved from an area to another, just hoping that one day everything will become the same, safe, but no. So we left to Idlib in the north of Syria, and kind of it is the same. There you were controlled by the government, and you are able to see everything bad, and the same thing also in Idlib. After that, like, the life was really hard. Like, you are not safe at all. You will be stopped by anyone who has gone. So we left to Turkey. From Turkey, we stayed there for a year and a half. Like, maybe a lot of Syrian or a lot of people there, they will say the life is hard. And this is not just, it is not enough to say the life is hard, because you need to explain why you cannot stay there. The first thing, I stayed working for a year and a half. I have never seen a contract that guarantee my right if something bad happened to me while I am working. The same thing, I'm not allowed to work. Even like, you are not allowed by law to be recognized as a refugee. Like, we were known there as a guest. A lot of people, they think that we are cowards and we are coming there just to hide behind their backs. We tried to explain a lot of times that this war is something awful, because your enemy is yourself. You are either fighting your friend, your cousin, and someone you know. So after a year and a half, we took the boat. 67 people, including my family and I. Small boat, 9 meters. This is the length of it. And we crossed the sea because we believed that we will find the safety and dignity in Europe. At least maybe to achieve some of goals, because a lot of us were in schools and had dreams for their lives. That was the reason I went to Greece. my first interview, and this is the registration interview, it was like, as Helen mentioned, it is about Turkey, whether Turkey is a safe country for you or not. Until that time, the life was, you are surrounded, you will see fans, policemen, everything. Like, you are stuck in a camp where you can do nothing except waiting. One day I was like in the downtown, in a stationery shop, and then I saw Helen for the first time. She invited me for a cafe, like she just came. In the beginning, when the people start moving to Europe or traveling to Europe, the local people, they were really nice. They were like smiling and helping. But with the time when a camp, this camp was built for 600 person only, but at the time it was over 3,000. So imagine what will happen to you if you have this place in your beautiful island. So you will see that a lot of faces are angry. And that was when I saw Helen. Like, it was really nice for me, because a lot of time you see a lot of people angry at you or looking at you with anger.
I just went up. So this was my second day in Samos, and I went there because I knew what was going on. All the other journalists were going to the island of Lesbos, which was more famous, with a more famous refugee camp. But I knew there was one that was just as bad in Samos that nobody was paying attention to. So I went to that one to see how it was. This was 2018. My second day, I walked into this shop to buy a map. And I saw Iyad there asking for something in English. So I just, accosted you and asked and invited you for coffee. I forgot to explain why or who I was. But then eventually I did. And Iyad couldn't meet me then, but we agreed to meet up the next day. And that's the scene I just read, where we met when I was actually in the camp waiting to meet the manager. For an official tour of the camp, which I never got, and it never happened. She stood me up. But that's how we met. And we hit it off, and we went up the mountain, and we started talking to Hassan. And I very shortly, then we kept meeting day after day, and Iyad would bring me more people who wanted to talk to me. And what I was asking about was what it was like to live in the camp from day to day. How do people survive there? And I really want to know, how do you survive in a place like that? Because it was really awful. Not only was it stuck, it was behind, the fences and barbed wire and concrete walls with metal shipping containers that people lived in, crowded together on bunk beds. But between the containers were thousands and thousands of tents just crammed in everywhere, spilling out all over the hill. Piles of litter, rats running around, broken porta potties, stench of sewage. It was what I call like a slum inside a prison, is what it looked like. So I wanted to know how people survive from day to day. And a lot of people wanted to talk about that, because this is not what they had expected.
This is East End Inc. We are listening to Helen Benedict and Iyad Awadnan, co-authors of Map of Hope and Sorrow. The book tells the stories of refugees who became trapped in refugee camps in Europe.
A lot of people, they think that we are cowards and we are coming there just to hide behind their backs. We try to explain a lot of times that this war is something awful, because your enemy is yourself. You are either fighting your friend, your cousin, and someone you know. So after a year and a half, we took the boat. 67 people, including my family and I. Small boat, 9 meters. This is the length of it. And we crossed the sea, because we believed that we will find the safety and dignity in Europe. At least maybe to achieve some of goals, because a lot of us were in schools and had dreams for their lives. That was the reason I went to Greece.
And then what happens, part of the this EU-Turkey deal I mentioned, is that once that was instituted, every asylum seeker had to go through two interviews. And the first interview was they had to prove that it's not safe to be sent back to Turkey. Because one of the rationales behind this this deal was that Turkey was what is legally called a safe third country. In other words, people could be sent back there safely. But as Ziad just said, Turkey does not recognize the rights of refugees, does not recognize Syrians, for example, as refugees at all. Nor has it, when it finally signed the Geneva Refugee Convention document that grants international rights to refugees to seek asylum and to not be persecuted, it did not sign the part that agreed not to commit refoulement, which is what this wonderful French word, which means sending people back to the country that they fled, where they will probably be killed. Turkey, I don't think many people in America know this, but Turkey never agreed to that, to not commit refoulement. So it means that if you flee to Turkey from Afghanistan or Syria or many other countries at war, it can send you right back there, even though death awaits you in that place, which is, against international law all over the rest of the West. So it is not a safe country, and this has been pointed out many, many times, and yet Greece to this day continues to insist that it is. So that's the first way people get trapped. And then they have to wait, if they pass that interview and they don't get deported, then they have to wait for the second interview, which is the actual asylum interview, where the judges decide whether to grant you official refugee status, and that can be a wait of years between the two interviews, years and years. And meanwhile, you're living in a camp. You want to talk a bit about what that's like?
After, like, my first interview, and this is the registration interview, it was like, as Helen mentioned, it is about Turkey, whether Turkey is a safe country for you or not. So until that time, the life was, you are surrounded by nothing except like, you will see fence, policemen, everything. Like, you are stuck in a camp where you can do nothing except waiting. One day I was like in the downtown, in a stationery shop, and then I saw Helen for the first time. She invited me for a cafe, like she just came and she was talking to the owner. It was really nice moment. Okay, in the beginning, when the people start moving to Europe or traveling to Europe, the local people, they were really nice. They were like smiling and helping. But with the time when a camp, this camp was built for 600 person only, but at the time it was over 3,000. So imagine what will happen to you if you have this place in your beautiful island. So you will see that a lot of faces are angry. And that was when I saw Helen, like, it was really nice for me, because a lot of time you see a lot of people angry at you or looking at you with anger.
I just went up. So this was my second day in Samos, and I went there because I knew what was going on. All the other journalists were going to the island of Lesbos, which was more famous, with a more famous refugee camp. But I knew there was one that was just as bad in Samos that nobody was paying attention to. So I went to that one to see how it was. This was 2018. My second day, I walked into this shop to buy a map. And I saw Ia there asking for something in English. So I just accosted you and asked and invited you for coffee. I forgot to explain why or who I was, but then eventually I did. And Iyad couldn't meet me then, but we agreed to meet up the next day, and that's the scene I just read where we met when I was actually in the camp waiting to meet the manager for an official tour of the camp, which I never got, and it never happened. She stood me up. But that's how we met. And we hit it off, and we went up the mountain, and we started talking to Hassan. And I very shortly, then we kept meeting day after day, and Iyad would bring me more people who wanted to talk to me. And what I was asking about was what it was like to live in the camp from day to day. How do people survive there? Because I was working on the novel that Marianne just mentioned, The Good Deed, and I wanted a flavor of, and I really wanted to know, how do you survive in a place like that? Because it was really awful. Not only was it stuck, it was behind, you know, the fences and barbed wire and concrete walls with metal shipping containers that people lived in, crowded together on bunk beds. But between the containers were thousands and thousands of tents just crammed in everywhere, spilling out all over the hill, piles of litter, rats running around, broken porta potties, stench of sewage. It was what I call like a slum inside a prison, is what it looked like. So I wanted to know how people survive from day to day. And a lot of people wanted to talk about that, because this is not what they had expected from Europe.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends, and a lot of them, they just wanted to talk about what they are facing and what they are feeling. So they were really, I don't know if this is the right word, excited, but they want the world to know what is happening. And we think that the best thing is through writing. So we were meeting with Helen. We were telling about everything. A lot of them, like, they wanted to show that this is what means to be asylum seeker in Greece.
Yeah, and we were also going to head up towards Macedonia. In other words, we wanted to talk to people who were living in these really remote camps, because what the Greek government was doing was sending people out of sight as far as they could, out, you know, with the kind of out of sight, out of mind philosophy. We don't want to see refugees, so we'll send them to these really remote cold corners. But that was March 2020, and you all know what happened in March 2020. So there was I, packed, all ready to go, meet up with Iyad, do this work. And I couldn't go because the lockdown started happening. And even if I'd gotten there, I wouldn't have been able to get back. So that's when we had the idea that Iyad was in Greece already. I already knew he was a great interviewer because I'd seen the way people open up to him in our talks when we'd met up. And I knew he was a really good writer too. So I just thought, why not be co-authors? And Iyad could interview people, Arabic speakers in Greece in person when he could through COVID. And I would interview people who spoke English or French over WhatsApp who were still trapped in camps until I could go back. So that's sort of what it took us through the worst years of COVID, which was really actually lucky in a way, because we both had a lot to do, and the people we talked to had quite a lot of time on their hands because they couldn't go anywhere. And as we mentioned, it's almost impossible to find a job or do anything. It is impossible to go to school. So the people we found were willing to spend a lot of time telling our stories. You know, I was thinking, Iyad, when you were saying about how we felt it was really important to kind of push back against the outrage of this situation by writing. Ida B. Wells, who was this really famous, important early journalist in America, African-American journalist, she said something like, this will be a paraphrase, but something like, the first act of resistance is to tell stories. And I think that it's perfect, isn't it? And it's exactly the way everybody in the book felt about why they wanted to be in the book and why they wanted to tell us their stories. It was their act of resistance.
And the other thing also, it is not just about their time as a refugee. We wanted to tell the whole story, just to tell people that our life did not start near the border of Europe. Before Europe, we had like life. Yes, it might be not rosy for all of us, but at the same time, we had a beautiful life. We had this sense of belong to a place where you know that you are able to do something.
Yeah.
You can like achieve your goals, or at least you can continue your study.
Right. So each person, because we felt it was really important not to do what journalists usually do and just pigeonhole people into the big moment of trauma in their life, survivor, refugee, you know, that kind of thing, was we wanted to open it up, as Iyad just explained. Each person has three chapters. The first is their life at home, their childhood memories, their family lives, you know, what was going on in their love lives, and you know, the things that concern us all, and up until the moment they were forced to leave. Their second chapter is the journey, the flight, some of which are astonishing, what people endure and what they can endure to survive and to help their children survive. And the third chapter for each one person is what happened to them once they reached Greece. So that's the pattern of the book. That's why we only feature five people, because each of them has three chapters, and any more than that, the book would have been unmanageably long.
Yeah, and there is something important about this book. And I would say that this is the idea of Helen in the first place. Because Helen used to see that a lot of people write the stories for others. They tell the story. But for us, we wanted this book to be in their own words.
This is EastEnding. We heard Helen Benedict and Iyad Awadnan, co-authors of Map of Hope and Sorrow. The book was published by Footnote Press in October 2022. Helen Benedict is a British-American professor of journalism at Columbia University. Iyad Awadnan is a Syrian writer and refugee now living in Iceland. The program was recorded by Canio's Cultural Cafe in Sag Harbor. A link to the entire discussion is at moreeastendinc.blogspot.com. Upcoming literary events on the East End include on Friday, January the 6th at 6 p.m., Canio's bookshop owners Catherine and Marianne discuss the surprises and serendipities of bookselling in the 21st century at The Church, 48 Madison Street in Sag Harbor. Registration is required at thechurchsagharbor.org. On Thursday, February the 9th at 7 p.m., poets Bart Malio and Moira Linehan read from their work at Canio's Books, 290 Main Street in Sag Harbor. Look for more events at canio'sbooks.com. East End Inc. programs are archived at moreeastendinc.blogspot.com. East End Inc. was produced by Tony Ernst with the aid of Catherine Zoka and Marianne Calandro. This is Hazel Kahn.